Amen.
Well, today we get to start a new series, and I'll get to that in a second. But last week, just want to remind you where we left off with a very special service. We ended our series in the book of Genesis. We had a few dedications, a new member, and a special children's story, and had a good time. And so this week we're off into a new series called Why Worry? And what we're really trying to do here is we're trying to hear the concerns that are on our minds and then see what the Bible has to say about those concerns and those worries. And so in the past 2 weeks, I've been taking suggestions from our people regarding what worries them the most. And from here, I try to clump similar comments together on the same Sunday. And so today, I got a big hair on my sleeve there. So today's concerns deal with work and money. So that's what we're dealing with today. And actually, I also want to say this as well, that many of these concerns and comments are very general, and they're going to get a general response. And they're just to get us started about thinking on these topics. I'm generally going to probably look at two or three comments per Sunday. So let me pray. Lord, thank you so much for your presence among us. We just sang about that. We thank you so much, Lord, for your presence here among us. Lord, we pray that you would teach us from your word today as we look at the topic of work and finances. Please encourage us and give us guidance in these areas. Amen. So again, that little insert was in your bulletin, and some people have been filling these things out. And the bulletin or the insert went something like this. What worries me the most right now in life is dot, dot, dot. And the first person that, the first comment I had today says this, our finances. Our finances. They didn't say anything more about that, and it was anonymous. So I was very tempted as I got this note. I was very tempted to give you a long list of points of everything we need to know about finances, but we'd be here for a long time. And instead, I just have 2 points I want to share with you that come to mind, or 2 reflections that come to mind as we talk about worrying about finances. In fact, a couple years ago, we did a mini series just on this alone. And in fact, many of the comments that we are receiving, we could do a series on every comment, but we're just going to just reflect on these categories as we go. Okay, so two points I want to talk about when we talk about money, and the first is this. The first point is that you can't serve both God and money. You can't serve both God and money. Jesus says this. He says, no one can serve two masters. And by the way, there was something about this verse that kind of, I'll explain later, it just kind of jumped out at me. Jesus says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And like I said, there was something that really hit me about this statement, that we can actually serve money. You know, I understand the concept of serving God. I mean, that makes sense to me, because after all, he is God, we are his creation, and we should be serving him. That makes sense to me. But Jesus says here that it's not just possible to have money, but we can actually serve money. We can treat it like another God in our lives. And so if there are people in the world who serve money and there's other people in the world who serve God, what are some of the different characteristics of those who serve money as opposed to those who serve God? Let me just give you a list of what that might look like in someone's life. One who serves money, for example, one characteristic you might see in them is that they might give money for all to see. On the other hand, someone who serves God, they might give in secret to be rewarded by God alone. Now you can check out Matthew 6, 1 to 4 on your own for a reference. Someone who serves money, they might give so that they can eventually get something in return. So they might be giving with mixed motives. Someone who serves God, they give to everyone, especially to those who can't pay them back. You can check out a story in Luke 14 on that one. Someone who serves money, they will spend their money first on themselves, and then they'll give God the leftovers. In other words, they put themselves first. Kind of like the story of a boy who, a long time ago, who would go to church with his grandmother on a regular basis, and they had a great time going to church. And then after they were done church, they would go have some ice cream. But this particular Sunday, grandma wasn't feeling well, so she gave her grandson 2 nickels. And she said, son, the first nickel is for God, so when you go to church, make sure you put that first nickel in the offering plate. And the second nickel is for you to get ice cream after the service. And the boy was just so ecstatic that he was given this money and this responsibility. And off he went all alone, all by himself to church. And he was skipping and jumping all the way to church. And he got to this point where he had to cross a bridge. And he was jumping and skipping and the bridge was swaying. And all of a sudden, one of the nickels dropped out of his hands. And he watched it hit the floor of the bridge. And he tried to reach as fast as he could to get that nickel, but it fell even further and flipped into the river and disappeared. To which the boy, he stood up, he brushed himself off, and he said, "Oh well, there goes God's nickel." And, you know, in a similar way, some of us, we put ourselves first. We think about ourselves before God. That's a characteristic of someone who is serving money. On the other hand, someone who's serving God, the very first thing they think about is what they will give to God, and then they think of themselves second. They put God first. It's kind of like the story of a little girl who went to this store with her mother, and they were shopping, and she found this cheap set of pearls, but to a kid, it was just amazing. She found this cheap set of pearls in the store, and she told her mom, "Mom, I really got to have these pearls. Can you buy them for me?" And she says, "No, I'm not going to buy them for you, but I will let you save up your own money and you can buy them for yourself." And so the daughter said, "Yeah, I'm in. I want to do this." And so the mother said, "Okay, we're going to have to increase your allowance and we're going to have to get you finding more chores to do. And soon enough, you'll have enough money to buy these pearls." And so within 2 weeks, the girl worked hard. She went back to the store. She bought these pearls for herself and she absolutely loved them. They were $1.95, if I didn't mention that yet. And she wore these pearls. She wore them to school. She played with them. She wore them to dance class. She even slept with them. But the only time she took them off was when she was either swimming or taking a bath. Well, it just so happened that this little girl named Jenny, she also had a father who was very special to her and loved her very much. And she was going to bed that night when she got the pearls, and Daddy came into her bedroom and read her a story. And after the story was read, her daddy went to Jenny, and Daddy said, "Jenny, do you love me?" And Jenny said, "Of course I do. Of course, Daddy, I love you." And Daddy said, well, give me your pearls." And Jenny said, "Oh, no, Daddy, not my pearls. You can have anything else. You can have my princess and my pony, but please, not my pearls." And Daddy said, "That's okay. I love you. Good night." Well, the same thing happened the second night. Jenny was getting ready for bed. Daddy comes up, reads her a story, and says, "Jenny, do you love me?" And Jenny says, "Of course I love you, Daddy, of course." And then Daddy says, "Well, then give me your pearls." And Jenny said, "Oh, no, no, you can have anything else. You can have my stickers and my stuff. He's just not my pearls." And Daddy said, "No problem, that's okay." And he left. The third night was a bit different. It was bedtime. Jenny goes to bed. Daddy comes up to read a story. But as he comes in, he notices that Jenny is sitting on her bed cross-legged and she's crying. And she's holding out these pearls to Daddy. And she says, "Here you go, Daddy. You can have my pearls." Well, Daddy was pretty touched by this offer. And so as soon as he reached over to grab her pearls, he reached into his pocket and he pulled out a blue case. And she opened it and she found a beautiful set of real pearls. And you know, many of us kind of live life in a similar way. Sometimes we worry. God asks us for pearls. He asks us for our very best, and we worry how God's going to use those pearls. But as we put God's kingdom first, God will in turn, I believe, honor us as well. So we need to make sure we're putting God first. A couple of other characteristics. Someone who serves money, they spend their time wondering about how their earthly investments are performing. Someone who serves God, they spend their time, you know what they spend their time doing? They spend their time wondering how to maximize eternal investments with the resources that God has given them. Check out Matthew 6:33 on your own. And lastly, another characteristic is that one who serves money, they worry that they won't have enough no matter what they have. And those who serve God in their hand, they trust that the Lord will always provide. Matthew 6:34, you're welcome to read that too on your own. Now, there's many more traits or characteristics we could look at, but if you are in a situation right now where you are worrying over money, it might be an indication that money has a bit of control over you, and we need to watch out for that. And so the first point that I want to share again is that you can't serve both God and money. And if Jesus were here today, he would challenge us to pick one or the other. So what's it going to be, God or money? The second point that I want to share is this. The second point is invest in relationships. I'm going to take some time to explain this, but a few months ago, my wife and I in particular, we were actually talking about having some kind of a friendship budget. It's important to invest in friendships. We haven't really specified what that looks like yet, but there's something we're shooting for there. Now, this whole concept came back to mind recently because of events that happened this past week. And I think of Vern Brown's funeral. You know, that funeral on Tuesday was probably one of the largest, what probably was the largest funeral I've ever been to. And as I've talked to a few other people in the church, they would say the same. That was the largest funeral they've ever been at. And I believe it was a very large funeral because Vern understood this concept very well. Vern knew how to invest in relationships. You know, according to Happify.com, the happiest people are the most social. Let me read this for you. Convincing evidence of this phenomenon comes from Ed Diner and Martin Seligman, two leading experts in the field of happiness research. When they compared the happiest to the least happy people, they found that the first group was highly social and had the strongest relationship ties. In fact, good social relations were a necessity for people to feel happy. Similarly, other psychologists have written that the need to belong is fundamental. Vern was a guy who invested in relationships, and not everybody was here, so I just want to briefly mention a few things that Vern did to invest in relationships. Vern, he biked with people, he golfed with people, he took people out for meals, he lent out his vehicle, he opened his home, he built a beautiful backyard for his family and for others to enjoy. He offered to pay for things that simply focused on building relationships, and he wasn't just helping financially. He engaged with people on a relational level. He could do small talk really well, but he could quickly turn any conversation into a deep and meaningful one. And, you know, after Vern's funeral, I was talking to the president of CanIL, who replaced Mike. And, you know, so here's this young president who's probably a little bit nervous in his new role, and he just started a few years ago. You can correct me if I'm wrong there, Mike. But anyways, this new young president is in this new role, and Vern goes up to this new guy, and he says, listen, you are a great investment. And I'm sure that would have made that young new leader feel really empowered. Vern invested in relationships, and it's no surprise why so many people showed up for his funeral. And I bet if Vern was ever in trouble, there would be a crowd of people who would come to his aid. You know, this makes me think of a story that Jesus told of a rich man who had tons and tons of possessions. And he had so many possessions that he had to hire a manager to look after his possessions. And so this manager was doing his thing, managing this rich man's possessions until something happened. We don't know what, but this rich man called this manager, he confronted him, because he felt this manager was misusing his possessions. We don't know what that was, but he called the manager to give an account for what he was doing, and he said, listen, you're going to get fired very soon. And so the manager realized he needed to act fast, because he thought to himself, man, I can't do physical labor. I'm too old for that, and I'm too proud to beg. So, man, I should do something. I need to do a favor for people so that maybe one day they might do a favor for me. So he went to the people who owed this rich man a ton of money, and he said to the first man, how much do you owe my master? And the man said, $1,000. He said, hey, if you pay right now, how about we make it 700? And he said, deal. He went to the second guy. Hey, how much do you owe my master? $2,000. If you pay right now, I'll give you a deal, $1,300. And they were like, yeah, I'm in. Let me pay right now. And the story goes on. Jesus is telling the story, and he says that the master or the owner, even though that he was going to fire the man, he commended the manager for being so shrewd. And then, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I've read the Bible many times, but sometimes it's when I read certain verses or passages in the Bible, it's as if I've never read that verse before ever in my life. I didn't see it. Sometimes my eyes just gloss over certain verses. Well, Jesus concludes this story with a verse that I've never seen before. My eyes had glossed over it. And I want to read that verse to you. It's Luke 16:9. Jesus summarizes the story, and then he says this. Jesus says, I tell you, He says, use worldly wealth to gain friends. Use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself so that when it's gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Use worldly wealth to gain friends. So whatever it looks like in your context and with the resources and money that you have, consider how you can invest in relationships around you. And so to sum it up, if you're worried about finances, what we're saying here, it's important to put God first, others second, and yourself last. We heard that this past week. And as we put God first and others second, I think many of our worries will be shrunk, if I can say it in that way. The second category, or the second worry we want to talk about today, is work. And the person who wrote this said this. They said, work, being useful and hardworking, but not letting it stress out our lives. So whoever that was, thank you for writing that that comment. And I just want to share with you three points that come to mind as we talk about work. The first thing I want to share is that, first of all, we need to know that work is good. We see right away in Genesis, before sin enters the world, that God gave us work. He gave us a job, and that job was to fill the earth, to subdue it, and to rule over creation. And so if God gave us work before sin entered the world, we need to know, first and foremost, that work is a very, very good thing given to us by God. In fact, I've talked about this before, but I'm quite confident that we're going to have a job in heaven, that we're going to have work in heaven. The Bible says we're going to play a part in ruling and reigning and even judging. Now, I'm not sure what that exactly what that's going to look like, but the point that I want to highlight is that work is a very good thing from God. I like what Ecclesiastes 3:22 says. So I saw there was nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. And so we should know that it's an absolute blessing from God to find enjoyment in work. I know that it doesn't always happen, but when we do find that, that's a blessing from God. I know one of my favorite jobs growing up as a teenager was working at a convenience store. I got paid minimum wage. There was never any hope of me ever getting a raise. I was always the lowest guy on the totem pole, but I loved it. probably one of the reasons I loved it was because it was so social. You'd have regular customers coming in, and you'd be able to chit-chat with them, and it was fun. However, some of us might be thinking, well, I haven't always had such great work experiences, and we can all relate that we've had some good jobs and maybe some bad jobs. And some of us might be thinking, hey, if work is such a good thing, why is work so difficult? Why is work so toilsome and stressful at times? Well, it's because of sin. Work was meant to be good, but sin messed it all up. And when sin entered the world, toilsome work was part of the curse. Listen into what God was saying to Adam right after they sinned, and he's explaining what happened as a result of sin, which was the curse, and this was one of the results. Genesis 3:17-19 says, cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat food from it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground. Since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. So basically, because of sin, work is going to get very toilsome, and we don't have to look too far to see that to be true. I would say my worst job in my life was working at a call center as a young adult. I hated it. I was working for Sprint USA, a cell phone company, and I don't want to say too much, but we had some bad, we had some rough clients who called in, who were always complaining about the bill, and usually they were swearing and cursing and getting mad at you. And I like to be a peaceful person. I don't like people mad at me, but that was a really stressful job to work at. I'm sure you can relate to maybe some bad jobs in your past. Maybe as I pull up some pictures here, you can relate to some of those bad jobs in our world. Man, who here would like one of those jobs? Anyone? Got a few hands. Okay, that's cool. Hey, so if you think you got a bad job, consider those guys. You know, but sometimes it's not the job itself that's difficult. You know, I was blown away by a stat that I read this week, and I'm just going to briefly say this. Here's the stat. 75% of workers who voluntarily left their jobs did so because of their bosses and not the position itself. That's crazy. Let me read that again. 75% of workers who voluntarily left their jobs did so because of their bosses and not the position itself. And, you know, there's a lot of people here who are employers or managers or whatever in our congregation. And for those of us who are in that situation, we need to be doing our very best to be treating our employees with respect and appreciation, if that's the situation you find yourself in. Now, I've got two more points under this work category, and I'm going to briefly kind of put them together because I have a really neat illustration. It's a video illustration that I'm going to share with you that puts these, that ties these two points together. The second point is rest is good, and the third point is work for the Lord. But let me talk about rest first. As we talk about work, rest is really important. We know that work is good, but we also need to remember that rest is good. In fact, rest was an important part of creation, to the point where God made it one of the Ten Commandments to make sure that we are taking a day out of the week to rest. And it's the way that God wired us, so it should be no surprise when we are not taking time to rest and recharge, and it can make our work life very, very stressful. So rest is good. And again, we're going to come back to an illustration that really, really helps us understand this point. And the third point is that we want to work for the Lord. And so there might be someone here asking, hey, what if I'm doing something in my life that feels totally boring, that feels totally mundane, feels totally meaningless? What about me? Well, I need to remember the things we do for work, whatever it may be, that we think may be mundane or meaningless, actually reflect the glory of God when we do them for the Lord. And they can actually become an act of worship. Colossians 3, verse 23 and 24 says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. And you know, sometimes the best way to say something is through a testimony, a story, a real-life illustration. And so that's what we're going to do right now. I'm going to show you a video entitled Correct Craft Building Boats for the Glory of God. Then I'll make a few more comments afterwards.
Correct Craft is an 87-year-old company in the marine business. The company was founded in 1925 by W.C. Maloon. We build the Nautique line of boats. It was built on a very strong faith culture. Through the efforts of many in the Maloon family, particularly Ralph Maloon, our current our chairman emeritus, who's 94 years old, still shows up for work every day.
I don't know how much longer the Lord's going to allow me to walk in the door and be a part of it. I'm still able to win people to Christ, and why not? I mean, that's where my joy is. God made it very clear that it's our responsibility. You've not chosen me, but I have chosen you to go and bring forth fruit. So that's my job.
The company really became well known for its faith culture during World War II. They were given a job to build a little over 400 boats in 30 days, and the federal government insisted that they work Sundays in order to build the boats.
Well, we prayed about it, and they made it very clear there was going to have to be a miracle in order to accomplish that job. And Dad said, well, wait a minute, you told us there's going to have to be a miracle, and they said, yes, it's going to have to be a miracle. And I said, well, God's the only one who performs miracles, and that's why we're still going to serve the Lord on the Lord's Day.
Similar contracts were given to two or three different organizations, and Correct Craft was the only one that fulfilled its obligation not working Sundays when the other companies did work Sundays and weren't able to fulfill its obligation. At that time, the company became very well known for its faith culture. The last few years, we think we've built on it even bigger than it had been in the past. We started a company-wide Bible study. We do that every Tuesday morning at 11:30, and we have many employees come and join us for that Bible study. We do community service. That's an important part of our faith culture, serving our community outside of our local community. We've traveled to Central America several times to build houses, work in orphanages. Took a group of employees last year to Africa, went to Ethiopia, had an amazing time serving there. It's really important to us at Correct Craft that not only do we live out our faith here in Orlando, but we use the opportunity to serve those less fortunate around the world.
What's been really exciting for me is to see the number of people here, employees that through just the trips and having opportunity to work and help people, to see some of those people come to know the Lord.
It was the first night, I believe, in Tijuana, Mexico, and we were in the middle of the worst slum that you could think of, with the worst smells around us that you could possibly imagine, and yet I knew that this was where I was supposed to be. So I said the prayer that night, and it's changed my life, that one night.
One of the opportunities that our faith culture at Correct Craft gives us is the ability to interact with people who would never go in a church. And employees are a great example. Each year, we have employees come to faith because of our culture here at Correct Craft. We have the ability to live in a manner in front of them and share our faith culture with them. We have a number of lives literally transformed here at Correct Craft because of our faith culture, and these are people who would never walk in the door of a church.
To be honest, up until a few years ago, I didn't really do a whole lot of this stuff. I just started currently going on some of the mission trips and Bible study. I just started getting into the Bible study. And I mean, I would say as far as in my life, you know, it's definitely changed me. It's changed my views on stuff and just how I am as a person.
Sometimes we have to make decisions that impact people negatively. We believe that's part of being a good steward and operating our business well. It's not uncommon when we make a decision that impacts someone negatively that they'll throw out that we are a Christian company or that we have a faith culture. How could you make a decision that impacts us negatively? We're sensitive to that, but at the same time, we believe that operating a business well and being a good steward of our business is entirely consistent with our faith culture. We want people to know who we are by how we conduct ourselves and how we live our lives and how we operate in the marketplace. It's very important to us that our advertisements, our social media, each of the ways that we promote our product and our brand is consistent with our faith culture. Sometimes that means our ads may look a little different, may look a little more conservative than some of our competitors' ads, but it's important to us that they be a reflection of who we are.
You know, one thing that we always get discussions about is, the pictures in our boats, we have people dressed in either one-piece bathing suits or in tank tops, clothes, normal things that they wear. You know, it's somewhat a perception in the marketplace that, you know, we're not cutting edge or edgy, but it's just a commitment that we've made to the way we advertise our product and we portray our product.
They truly do have like a different stance in the world of wakeboarding. And you know, I remember being at events where they wouldn't have like the alcohol sponsors, or they would, you know, you see them take different steps that other companies won't do.
And what's cool is to see that kind of pour out into the wakeboard community. They are known as the high-end boat. And so everybody kind of aspires to own an Antique. They hold their value. You know, when you get it, you're getting a quality product. And everybody, you know, under the roof, whether Christian or non-Christian, knows that that's what the goal of this company is not just to go and build boats, but to do it for God's glory.
If it hadn't have been for R.G. Letourneau, we'd have never met all these other Christian businessmen. You just learn from businessmen how you better perform and how you better act in the world if you're going to win people to Christ. How can we be a good witness for the Lord if we're not successful in the business? We can't just say, well, hey, we're Christians, but we don't make any money, and we don't serve any Christian purposes. We don't do this, we don't do that. That's not the way it is.
Correct Craft's mission statement is building boats for the glory of God. It's very short. It's to the point. It captures who we are. And we just want to remind people that we have a higher mission. And it's important to us to know that we want to take care of our families. We want to build the world's best boats. But at the same time, we have a higher mission. We want to glorify God in what we do. And that drives everything that we do here at Correct Craft.
By the way, that video can be found at rightnow.org, which is a Christian website filled with thousands of videos. And you should know that our church pays a subscription for this website, again, of thousands of videos. And the reason why our church pays this website is to give you guys a free subscription to this website. So if you would like a free subscription to check out all these videos on this website, see Brenda or myself, and we can give you a free username and password. So anyways, as we talk about work, remember that first of all, that work is good, that rest is good and important, and that three, we need to be working for the Lord. Whatever it is that we do for work, we need to work for the Lord, whatever he has us doing. And I think as we do those things, I think our worries will be, if I could say it this way, it'll be reduced, and we will be able to serve God at a much higher level. Let me pray. Lord, there's many things in life that concern us and worry us. We know that, Lord. And we know that some of us here have issues with money and work, and those things can weigh heavy on our minds. And Lord, we pray that you would help us to honor you with our money and with our work. For those of us who are grinding it out in unusual circumstances, Lord, with work or money, we just pray that you would give us wisdom for the next steps, that you would provide for us, that you would give us patient endurance, and that you would give us everything we need to represent you well in our world. And we just pray all these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.